insight is important. But for me, the greatest challenge for me as a teacher is the desire to make you think. The desire to give you the desire to think about something more, like to go away and think about how you might want to apply it, right? And a lot of people don't learn just by listening to someone going on and on. People need there needs to be more to learning than just a lecture, for example, right? So I try to choose topics and bring you studies that I've read and things to nurture thinking in your heart, meditation, I guess, about different areas of life. And this morning what I wanted to talk to you about is the incredible impact and power of wisdom. God places wisdom in the highest regard. He says wisdom is the ultimate thing to pursue other than Him. You know what I mean? And so I'm going to share a couple of scenarios with you concerning wisdom that at the end of the message, I wouldn't mind your input on how that scenario could have been improved on, maybe, or did the decisions that were made, were they the right ones? Should something different have happened? I want to send two or three scenarios to you this morning and chat with you. So I want you to know that when PJ and I ask you a question, it's not because we're trying to test you so we can prove you don't know something. Our desire is to engage you in the process of the message, because we know that we have things to impart. We know that we learn from each other. Like Frederick said, we're not an island. And I certainly don't know everything about the topic I share, and you may know many things. And right now I'm on a learning curve like you wouldn't believe, because at work our entire computer vetting tech system has changed, and I'm having to upgrade my knowledge considerably. And it's really quite a challenge, but it's good for me. It's good for my brain.
Sure. So I'd like to look at two verses of scriptures today. The first one is in Proverbs chapter 3, and it's really interesting. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 13, and then we're going to look at James chapter 3, also verse 13. And James is called by many scholars the Proverbs of the New Testament because of the teaching about wisdom. So in Proverbs 3:13 it says, "Blessed are those who find wisdom and who gain understanding, for she's more profitable than silver and yields better returns than gold. She's more precious than rubies, and nothing you desire can compare with her." That's amazing. Nothing we could ever desire can compare with the value of wisdom. "Long life is in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. For her ways are pleasant ways, and her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who find her or take hold of her, and to those who hold her fast, they will be blessed. By wisdom the Lord laid the earth's foundations. By understanding he set the heavens in place. By his knowledge and watery depths were divided, and clouds let drop the dew. My son, do not let wisdom and understanding out of your sight. Preserve sound judgment and discretion, for they will be life to you, an ornament to grace your neck. Then you will go on your way in safety, and your foot will not stumble. And when you lie down, you will not be afraid. When you lie down, your sleep will be sweet. Have no fear of sudden disaster or the ruin that overtakes the wicked, for the Lord will be at your side and will keep your foot from being snared." So we see here that God puts great value, and this isn't the only, it's the whole of Proverbs really talks about wisdom. Much of the New Testament talks about wisdom. God says we should cry out for wisdom, we should pursue it, we should be passionate to want wisdom. Why? Well, because as we're going to see this morning, wisdom is the ultimate thing that enables you to live the best possible life you can live in God. Right? Not worldly good life, but godly good life, right? And so there's a crisis currently, a crisis in the area of wisdom in our nation and in, you know, many nations, I'm sure, but studies are showing some very interesting things about education. That the generations currently that are being taught in school, because of the knowledge explosion, because of all of the information that's available on the internet now, students are learning more and faster than better. They're learning a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff that, you know, took us perhaps longer to learn.
they're finding that the students' IQs have gone up something like 9% over, I'm not sure exactly what span of time, but IQs are going up because of the availability of so much knowledge and the quickness of learning and the new technology, right?
Yeah.
But what they're finding is that there is not a correlation of wisdom accompanying that knowledge.
And in fact, it's very interesting. There's an article in that I have called Teaching Adolescents How to Evaluate the Quality of Information Online. And they were saying that school-age children and teens, preteens and teens online, don't think on their own about, for example, the accuracy of something they're reading, whether it's verified by consulting, you know, people who are experts at this, at whatever particular topic it is, that they don't have just a natural desire to gain perspective. Like, for example, what is the bias of what you're reading? How does the author shape what he's writing? And they don't know the reliability or information about the author or publishing body. And so they were saying that what parents and teachers need to be doing is teaching their young people how to process the information they're getting on the internet. Because so much of it is nonsense, but a lot of it is destructive. If we all know if you believe something that isn't true, then it's not going to do you any help. And so that's why I think we can see the crisis of wisdom when we turn the TV on and we hear, that our main stage in our culture is dominated by a lot of things that are not based in wisdom, right? And so, it's easy to say, throw up our hands in the air and say, what are you going to do? It's just the way it is. And it's really sad because years ago, professions like politicians and ministers and teachers and that, they were considered these fountains of wisdom. They were considered the ones you would respect for wisdom, and that is not the case today, right? The people with wisdom are often in the background doing their work, but we're not seeing and hearing about it on mainline media because it's just not the way it works. And so the only thing, that conclusion I can come to is that my responsibility as an adult is to continue to grow in wisdom. That wisdom will show in how I live my life, as we'll see as we go through my notes. The only way we're ever going to change the world is to change ourselves first, right?
Yeah.
To be willing to grow and to learn. So when it comes to wisdom, there's a scenario I want to throw out, and then I'm going to go to James chapter 3 and look. Because Proverbs tells us that wisdom is ultimately important, but James tells us why and how, okay?
Here's the scenario that I want to throw to you. I was talking recently to a retired school teacher, and she's a lovely, grounded lady. You can kind of tell when you meet someone, the three minutes of conversation. This was a grounded woman who had taught all of her career in grade school. And she was just telling me, a lot of things have changed in the system over the years. And she was saying some of it is very stressful stuff. Because rules and policies have been made that we can evaluate, when I tell you this, that don't always work in the best interest of all, okay? You have all kinds of issues with schools, that you don't always have cooperation between teachers and parents, and then you have parents with wisdom, and parents without wisdom, and all these sorts of things. But here was the scenario. One child was having difficulty of some kind within the classroom, to the degree that, she said, the only way to deal with it, whatever it was, and she didn't specify, I think it was behavior, but as we'll see later when we chat about it a bit more, maybe it was more than that. Whatever was going on, though, it was probably a crisis issue with this child, okay? And because of the policies, rules, etc., their recourse was to evacuate the classroom. Okay, all the kids out in order to be able to deal with this one child that they're not allowed to touch or restrain or guide out. They're not allowed to do anything, okay? So, and then she said it was so, this particular teacher that was working with this class, and I was stressing. And then she said another time, the same child, I don't know what happened to that child, maybe it's a different child, but a child, not only did the classroom have to be evacuated, they had to evacuate the school. Okay? And these are the scenarios that require real, true wisdom. These are not scenarios that you can just pop up and answer and then hope it works, right?
Okay, so let's turn to James chapter 3 and look at what it says in verse 13. In James chapter 3, 13, James asks a really good question that we should ask ourselves. And the question is this: who is wise and understanding among you? Who? Who is wise and understanding among you? I find that to be a pretty powerful question, and it makes me realize that we need to understand the difference between wisdom and knowledge. Because understanding involves knowledge. Understanding is a deeper level of knowledge. For example, if you learn, you can learn a topic, and know the facts. But when you have understanding, if the word there, the word knowledge in the Bible, the Greek word that was translated from means to acquire knowledge and understanding through a long period of acquaintance, through research, through study, through applying yourself, through making learning a priority. This is not casual learning, this is learning something well, okay? This is learning something deeply. See what I wrote in my notes. It's facts. Knowledge is related to facts and study, research, investigation, observation, experience, and awareness. Knowledge is also the development of skill. For example, I can't go to the medical board and say, I believe I can be a doctor. I don't have to go to school. I don't have to write an exam. Because God will give me wisdom. Well, they're not going to accept me. Because as a Christian, we have to learn certain things outside the church. The Bible teaches us the principles of moral character living and relating to our world. But it doesn't tell me how to be a doctor. It didn't tell me how to be a nurse. So we have to learn these skills and then apply them to the teachings of the Bible. So knowledge is basically your facts. Or facts as best we can understand them at this point in time. But we all know that knowledge base increases as more things are learned. Correct? So part of the process of learning over your lifetime, you have to be willing to unlearn certain things. For example, when I became a grandma, I found out that babies now sleep on their back only. That was not the knowledge we had. It was not the knowledge my mother's generation had. In those days, they automatically put babies on their tummy. Why? Because they sleep better. Typically, they do. But research, science, has given us now the knowledge that babies sleeping on their backs are much safer because there's a lower rate of sleep. So a grandma has a choice of being sort of arrogant and not willing to learn, or say, wow, this is new information and I need to apply it, right? So your knowledge base is always going to have to be growing because there's new things being learned all the time. Wisdom, however, is the way to apply the knowledge that you learn. Wisdom is good judgment. It's the ability to make the best choices and decisions, not only for yourself, but for the bigger picture. Wisdom is the person who can take what they know, apply it to their own lives as required, but also understand the big picture of how their choices and decisions affect others. How will these choices affect my workplace? How will these choices affect my family, etc.? Wisdom is taking the knowledge that you have and using wisdom, having wisdom from God, to know how to apply what you've learned. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So wisdom is good judgment, the ability to assimilate and apply, to process information, which I shared with you, is something we need to teach our children, and we need to learn ourselves. You look up something on the internet, tells you this particular supplement is going to change your life. You don't bother checking any other sources. You don't check any reputable sources. You go off and buy it. It makes you sick and you wonder why. It's because you didn't have enough knowledge to make an actually wise choice. Does that make sense? Okay. Wisdom sees the big picture of who is affected, and wisdom knows its limitations. A person who is wise puts things in perspective to rise above their personal viewpoint.
Okay? A wise person understands that other cultures don't think the way we do. Now, we know God is right, so we know what God says is right. But the way that that is actually applied in other cultures is different. And we're never going to have peace with other people if we have the attitude that they're wrong and we're right about everything, right? So wisdom rises above personal, like, opinion. An opinion is not a piece of knowledge. An opinion is what I think something should be. Now, a lot of people share a lot of opinions and have no basis in facts or in truth. So I think part of being wise and part of knowledge is being smart enough to know when I shouldn't share my opinion, because I don't really know what I'm talking about. If I say today my opinion about firefighting is thus and so, it's going to be right off the chart, because I don't know the details are. But I've had people make comments to me about, well, my opinion about mental illness is yada yada yada, and I just don't say anything. Because if they don't ask me what I think, I'm not going to start a fight, right? But I've had people tell me, oh, I've never read the Bible, but my opinion is, okay. Alright. Lastly, people who are wise are reflective, self-aware. They manage their emotions and they possess empathy and compassion. So wisdom is being able to take all of your information and make a choice based not only on being able to process the information and all of that, but seeing the big picture. It's a moral thing. It involves compassion. It involves humility. It involves all of those things. It requires reflection. You don't just make, people who are impulsive make quick decisions, sometimes regret it later. Something to be thought of, you know? Now, does anyone have anything to add to what I've said? This is a very basic overview. But what I'm hoping is to continue with this study, certainly in my own life, about wisdom in various scenarios that we come across. There's a lot of really good information on the internet that you can find, but again, you have to make sure you have a reliable source. Talking to people who have wisdom is a good way to get wiser, I find. Old age is not a guarantee of wisdom. A lot of older people are very set in their ways and don't change their minds. No matter, you can present them a whole bunch of facts, but they may not accept them, okay? So that's what we're dealing with. So one old lady had on a t-shirt. I know she made it with fruit, but wisdom tells me not to put it in the fruit salad.
James 3:13 continued. Okay, so who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in the humility that comes from wisdom. So we see a lot of facts right there. Wisdom, genuine wisdom, always produces humility. They go together, okay? Good life are deeds done in that humility of wisdom. So a wise person will be able to be seen as a wise person by how they conduct themselves in their lives. Like James has said all through his teaching, and like it says all through the Bible, what is inside comes outside. Wisdom can be seen by the way a person lives their life. You can observe wisdom in other people. You can hear it in what they say. You can see it in how they conduct themselves. It will be shown by good deeds, good works, practical good things that, like Cedric mentioned, you know, people care for one another and so forth, but done in the humility, and that's the key, because you're going to see in the verse right underneath, it says, if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition, do not boast about it or deny the truth. And that, I'll explain what that means in a minute, but if you don't have humility, then you're going to have pride, right? You're going to have one or the other. So tell me what you think are some characteristics of humility. How do you recognize humility in a person, for example, or in yourself?
Humility.
Sorry?
Humility
and innocence. Very excellent. Humility, innocence. Good point. That brings me to a point about the tongue. The most dangerous thing in your possession is your tongue. It's in James as well, and it's to really grasp what it says. That one comment, one stupid Twitter comment, can set a whole course on fire, set your whole life on fire. It's hard to take those words back. So listening is really good, because sometimes we need to take time to think about what we're going to say and listen to the other person to gain their perspective. And in the end, you may not agree, but I still might have learned something from you that I didn't know before, and then able to apply more wisdom, right? So, other characteristics of humility.
Willing to yield.
Yeah, doesn't mean being a doormat.
No.
The thing is, you can't, you have to stay true to your commitment to God, right? So, but willing to yield, absolutely. I don't always have to win. Like, every conversation is not a battle, and I don't always have to be right, correct? Okay, what else? What else would you say?
Your approach.
Sorry?
Your approach,
yeah, that's true. You come across a certain, because people are arrogant, they come across arrogant, right? I think one of the biggest things about humility is to be teachable. You never get so old that you think you have nothing more to learn, because truthfully, the older I get, the more I know I don't know, and wish I had more time to learn. There's so much to learn. So many exciting, wonderful things to learn out in this world. So teachability, always learning. Collaboration.
Willing to admit you're wrong.
Hello, that's great. Willing to admit you're wrong is very freeing as well.
Yeah.
God's smart, and He tells us to be willing to do these things. It feels really good not to have to try to prove you're right all the time. Willing to be wrong. Willing to say I'm sorry.
Empathy.
What is empathy?
Put yourself in the other person's shoes and see from their perspective.
Absolutely. Put yourself in someone else's shoes. I love that idea, because it's such a great relational builder. The only way to build bridges in someone's life is to actually cross that bridge over to where they are. Stand where they are, look from where they see, and try to understand. Like I said, we don't have to necessarily adopt their ways, but it can bring you so much closer to someone to just understand where they're coming from, right? What else, humility? Forgiveness, taming the tongue, we spoke about that, and seeking to understand, and probably a thousand other attributes. But you get the point, right? Wisdom will always produce. So when it says don't boast and deny the truth, it's talking about the person who's always saying how wise they are, boasting about how wise they are, denying the truth that really they're proud of what they're doing. They're not self-aware. Proud people are often not self-aware. Okay? They don't like to be told they're wrong. They don't like to be challenged. They don't like to be accountable. They don't like to be vulnerable. They don't want to relearn something. They want to know it all. Even if they know nothing about the topic they want. Pride makes us compare ourselves to other people so that they look negative and we look positive. That's what pride is. We don't want that.
Describe a narcissist
person. A narcissist.
Okay. So, let's go on. So if you harbor, now that's a very good word, if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not boast about it or deny the truth. For such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and every evil practice. Wow. The word harbor, in this context, the word harbor means to hide. It means to hide. So if you harbor these attitudes of bitterness and selfishness in your heart, you are pretending they're not there. You will hide them because you know they're wrong. And if you, there's one thing to have privacy. I always said every home deserves to have privacy. But hiding big chunks of your life, you might want to look at what's not. You have to hide from other people big sections of your life if something's wrong. Okay? So if you harbor these attitudes, then it's going to create chaos and all these things that it's read. And basically, our world stage right now is all made by this kind of wisdom. We do not say constant fighting, bickering, putting each other down, mistreatment of one another, and just no, it's just not seeing a lot of wisdom right now. It's really frightening because this world needs leaders that are wise.
Amen.
that see the big picture, that are not motivated only by political gain or career gain or selfish, and that includes all of us. Like I said, we make a difference in our community, in our workplace, and in our church by cultivating this kind of wisdom and this kind of attitude, right?
Okay. So now, the church, I believe, is included. The church is included in what I just said, that the mainstream, what you see, it's not. I'm not saying that all the people in churches are prideful, unwise people. But what I'm saying is many of the ones that have the money to portray themselves on TV are. And that's just reality. And the ones who are actually cultivating this are often not seen in the public eye, is all I'm saying. And so the distortion, the distortion of what people really means and what wisdom really is, and that's what we said too. And again, the only way we can do that, we can speak up, we can stand up for things that are right. If you're a parent in the school and you don't agree with some policies, then perhaps it's time to speak up and make a difference. Pray. But we can only really control only one person, and that's me. We influence one another, though, right? So what do we do? What do we do to acquire this wisdom? The conclusion here. Okay. Number one is God. He's the creator. Colossians says, all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge are found in Christ. All the treasures of wisdom and knowledge are found in Christ. He's the creator. Now, we can discover things. So scientists discover things. The first man that ever discovered bacteria, his colleagues thought he was nuts. They didn't pay attention to him until they started to notice his mother could not die in childbirth. But he didn't create those bacteria. He found them. They're already there. God already knew they were there. He discovered them. When we invent something, we're using materials that God already made. So the only perfect mind, the only mind that is pure wisdom, pure knowledge is God. Right. So the first thing we do is acknowledge God is all wisdom. Then we do what James 1 tells us to do, and we pray every day and ask him for wisdom. Wisdom with my family, wisdom in my workplace, wisdom in my life in general, right? It says, and then it says, first of all, the wisdom that comes from heaven, verse 17, is first of all pure. And here's what that means. Pure is... The first and foremost reason for valuing wisdom is that it will lead people to do what is morally right. That's a challenge. And then it naturally, if your heart is pure, if the wisdom that you're hearing is pure, then it will produce peace, loving, considerate, submission, mercy, good fruit, impartial and sincere. Those are two really important words, because impartial means there's no favorites. You're not making a decision for your team based on what's best for you, or making a decision of your in your family for what's best just for you. You're being impartial. You know what I'm saying? When you're trying to make decisions about how we should get along with indigenous people and stuff, and all these issues with immigrants and everything that's going on, requires a huge amount of wisdom with people who are grounded, sincere, humble, and will collaborate and come up with the best possible solution. And even the best possible solution doesn't make anyone happy. But sometimes we just do one particular. Somebody said that to me, we're going to put on this call. But oh no, we're going to put this rule on, and then the next thing you know, we have more chaos instead of less. You know, we need to take a breath, we need to think, and we need to use our resources and stuff. So those scenarios, let's look at the one I shared with you about the boy in the classroom. What knowledge would you have to have? What kind of knowledge do you think you would have to make a decision to remove all of the classmates but the one? What kind of knowledge would you have to have? Off the top of your head. Yes, you need a sermon, but about what? You have to know what about the child. Is he going to harm anyone? Okay, what else? Is it just bad behavior? Is he screaming and throwing pencils and just being outrageous? That's one scenario. Is he dangerous? That's another scenario.
Is he destructive?
Okay. Is he having an epileptic seizure? Because if he was having an epileptic seizure, that can really scare. A lot of the kids probably have to remove them, right? But if this child is being absolutely out of control in a bad behavior. And the teachers are not allowed to even gently with the presence of a second responsible adult, not allowed to remove him from the room because we're not allowed to touch. Okay, yeah.
When it was a judgment and the behavior, yeah, this is judgment of the and the policy, okay, like that. That the other children have been removed, and that student was not removed. But I remember that student who had been brought me, and they said, you teach a child more anger by doing that with them, so they will have to be trying to make it sideways out of the corner of their eyes. And, you know, so they were trying new methods of teaching.
So here's what's happened over 100 years. 100 years ago, kids had a school that got wrapped on the mountain with a ruler or got a strap. Now, the kid is actually a total brat. We have to turn our faces aside and we're not allowed to even gently restrain anybody out of the room where they understand that their behavior. So what we're teaching now, this is my opinion and you're free to disagree. But when I saw that after thinking, I said, what message are we sending to that boy? When all his classmates have to leave and he gets saved in mind. If it was bad behavior, not something else, we'll just forget it. If the kid's holding a gun, yeah, we would call it a shoot. But if the kid is being obnoxious, then okay, maybe he's too big, maybe he's too strong, maybe he could physically do that. But I'm saying these are the kind of scenarios that need to be thought through to find the best solution. I understand why we've come so far around touching children. I understand going on that basis. I get that. You have to screen your staff and find qualified people who have a history of not being abusive, and you put two adults in if you have to. Two adults so that one can witness of the other one. Right?
Yeah.
There was another scenario. My sister does an after school cook program in Peterborough. And there's a lot of poverty there, so they have this after-school cook program where grade six kids come, and they have workstations, and they make the food for the evening meal, and they teach them how to do all this, and then the evening meal is shared by the students and their parents, come from work or wherever, and they all have a meal together. It's been a very successful program that actually the kids love and keep requesting to get it again. But here's the thing, if a parent does not show up at the end of the event to take their child home, the child is allowed to walk home by themselves in the dark, but not allowed to get into a car with an adult. That's stupid. It's only wisdom if I hear something that is
or will, you know, directly affect the functioning of the church, then of course he's a pastor, he has the right to know. But if somebody shares with me their personal heart on an issue, or I find out something negative or something, we have to be safe. Wisdom is safety. Jesus said, come unto me, I'm gentle and lowly of heart, you're safe with me. If you have, there's something called psychological safety that is part of wisdom. It's another whole talk we could do. But I believe that even in this sanctity of marriage, if I hear something negative that I know could affect my husband's view of that person, then I honestly feel convicted by God not to speak. Not that I'm trying to keep secrets and be asking a direct question. I'm not talking about being deceptive. I'm talking about, let's understand the reason why you repeat negative things to other people. Why do we do it? There's only two reasons we would do that. One is because we thought they were so terrific, and now we found out that they're not that terrific, so we feel pretty good about that. Pride. And the other reason is we thought they were not terrific to begin with, now we are reinforcing that they're even not terrific. And so I should better know myself. Also pride.
That's it. That's awesome.
But, so does that make sense to anybody? Like, really, if somebody shares something personal with you and you tell, you know, especially you tell, I don't know, people in authority over them, that, like, I don't go tell my boss at work some negative thing I hear about somebody at work, unless, in fact, I've never reported anyone in 20 years. Why? Because if I have an issue, I go to my person, and so far, that's all that I've needed to do. But you wouldn't believe how many people report behind other people's backs without having the full amount of information we need. It's so Vincent says, I want to be a safe person. I want you to be able to tell me anything you want and know that it's going to stay between me and God, and let's say you're going to be enough. Tell me if your heart's on level, so I can have to step in. Right? And I feel that guy's got the word in the word. But anyway, it's flashing through scenarios, right? They flashing through scenarios help to gain wisdom. Thinking about this angle, that angle, and what is the best. And you know, we've all made mistakes in life, especially going up to the world and 50. We've made a lot of mistakes. But that's okay. We can let go of those. We can't go back to the day, right? So God says today is a new day. My mercy is for you every morning. Keep learning. Keep growing. Keep becoming wise. Keep making your contribution in your workplace, in your family, in your church, until you die. Here we go. Lack of spiritual
ministry. And it's the same, it's not just being pushed right out of the schools, it's being pushed right out of everything on how we want to follow Christian together. So we have to get back to what our God is and what he's said. The spiritual side of it is incredibly important.
Especially with children. Because they're going to be influenced by the demonic entities and be exposed to things on television, that movie The Exorcist has impacted so many children who have got demon possessed.